Women have always been an important part of life on the farm, but they have traditionally played a supporting role. Now, more women are taking the lead. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today, we'll examine the changing role of women in agriculture on a special edition of Talk of Iowa, produced in conjunction with Harvest Public Media. Today, we're also broadcasting on KCUR Public Radio in Kansas City and welcoming listeners of Central Standard. In the next hour, we'll talk about the growing number of women farmers and landowners. We'll explore the special challenges these women face and find out how they're changing the world of agriculture. I'll talk with Corey Bregendahl of Women, Land, and Legacy and Lee Adcock, Executive Director of the Women, Food, and Agriculture Network. I'll also talk with a number of women farmers, and we'd like to hear from you. Join our conversation after the news. Welcome to a special edition of Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. Today's program is produced in conjunction with Harvest Public Media, which is a regional journalism initiative involving six NPR member stations in the Midwest, including Iowa Public Radio. And today we are also broadcasting on KCUR Public Radio in Kansas City and welcoming listeners of Central Standard into our conversation today. So good morning, Kansas City. Today we're going to talk about women in agriculture. The business of agriculture has long been a male-dominated field, but times are changing. Today, nearly 50% of farmland is owned or co-owned by women, and many women are managing and working that land. Later this hour, I'll talk with a number of women who are working the land, but my first guests today will help us understand how the role of women is changing. Corey Bregendahl is with the organization Women, Land, and Legacy. She also works for the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture at Iowa State University. Good morning, Corey.
Good morning.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having me.
Lee Adcock is also here. She's Executive Director of the Women, Food, and Agriculture Network. It's a group created to support women around the country who are involved in sustainable agriculture. Good morning, Lee.
Good morning, Charity.
Thank you for being here as well.
Thanks.
And Corey, I want to start with you. Women, Land, and Legacy has done some extensive research into the number of women involved in farming and the kind of work that they're doing. So tell me, what is changing? Why are more women being involved in agriculture?
Well, I think a lot of women are looking at it in terms of how they can contribute to their communities, and that's what Women, Land, and Legacy has found. There are a lot of women who want to support the land, support their communities. They want to benefit financially from farming, and so a lot of them are getting together and developing networks. But women have also felt they've been excluded from these things in the past, and so they're working hard at the local level through Women, Land, and Legacy to address some of these things. It may be useful to talk a little bit about Women, Legacy right now. It's a locally led interagency collaboration between the Farm Service Agency and the Natural Resources Conservation Service, and then the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture and Iowa State University Extension is also involved at the local level. And then there are nonprofits as well. And so this really is a local effort, and that's what is unique about Women, Land, and Legacy is that we have local planning teams that develop at the local level. The state team is simply here to provide resources, and I am a member of that state team, as is FSA and NRCS. So really, it's a locally led effort, and so the women decide what the issues are at the local level, and that initial process was listening sessions. The second step in Women, Land, and Legacy is a learning session, and these are all small group dialogues, and so women have defined what they want to learn about and who they want to come in and talk to them about these issues, and they want primarily women. And there's a whole dynamic and a whole process that Women, Land, Legacy has developed through the years since 2005.
And why, when this organization, when this network was put together in the first place, what was the need that people saw that wasn't being met with other traditional ways to educate farmers?
Well, there was a survey done in Cass County, and Women, Food, and Agriculture Network was involved in that, and perhaps Lee can speak to that. But they found that women were not accessing a lot of the programs, and on the ground, they were saying that they were excluded. And so there was a need. And then at the same time, the State Outreach Council, which is the USDA agencies in Iowa, came together, and they have outreach to women. And so they came together, and things progressed from there.
Well, and Corey, your group works with women who are involved in traditional agriculture and basically all kinds of agriculture. Lee, your group, Women, Food, and Agriculture Network, focuses on women who are involved in sustainable agriculture. And what was the need that you saw when this network got put together that you felt wasn't being met?
Well, Women, Food, and Ag Network actually arose out of the passion of several sustainable and organic farmers who happened to be women back in the late 90s, who looked around and saw, you know, they were doing a non-traditional form of agriculture in a very traditional ag-oriented area, which was Iowa. And not only were they women, which made them unusual, but they were pursuing an alternative type of ag, which made them even more unusual. So they really needed to talk to one another. They needed a network to support one another. Often they were geographically isolated in their communities. They were the weird lady down the road that wasn't, you know, cutting her weeds or whatever. So they found it very helpful to come together, not only in person when they could, but through this network of a newsletter and a website and a listserv, so that they could form a community of their own. And it's, you know, Women, Food, and Ag Network really exists to provide information and networking opportunities and leadership development for these women, because one thing that wasn't happening was that their voices were not being heard at the policy level. And I know Women, Land, and Legacy has been working at the same thing. We really want all women involved in ag, whatever path they take, to have a voice at the table, and that wasn't happening, and I think more so now it is, and we're very encouraged by that.
The sustainable agriculture movement is a growing movement, and it involves men and women, and men and women doing a different kind of farming than we've been used to, particularly in Kansas and Iowa and the other traditional farm states here in the Midwest. Why not include men in this network, Lee?
Well, you know, we do have men in the network, Charity, which is wonderful. I mean, there are obviously many men out there involved in sustainable ag, and they get it, and they support gender equity in agriculture. So we do have male members in the group. But we also know that women tend to face additional challenges because of the fact that they're women. And so they need a safe place to come together and talk about that, about the issues they may face as women in a very male-dominated field. So I compare it to other, you know, women's organizations in other industries that are heavily male dominated. You know, there are women's groups in a variety of fields, and this just happens to be the one that supports women in sustainable ag.
Corey, through all of your listening sessions, you have talked to a lot of women who are involved in agriculture in many different ways. Let's talk about some of the challenges that they face that you've learned about. What are some of the main problems that you hear about again and again?
Well, we hear stories about women being taken advantage of by people who may be renting their land. They also talk about a fear or discomfort of going in and accessing some government programs. They also talk about getting substandard information from resource providers that may be from co-ops. And so they have called some of these, in some cases, male folks who are providing this information to women on it and said, why haven't you given me the same information that you gave my husband when he was alive? And so women are starting now, when we found through Women, Land, and Legacy that they are raising the rents on their land. And it's interesting because I spoke with a friend recently about her mother's land, and her mother owns land in Wisconsin, and she doesn't charge any rent, none at all. And so that prompted me to look up some information provided through Iowa State Extension on cash rents. And they do have some good documentation on what the averages are across the state and by region. And the average acre is $184. And so I'm wondering how many acres that she is giving out for free for this landowner. And she should be getting that as an income, because that makes her business more credible.
Right. So you're talking specifically about a group of women that have sort of aged into farming. These are women whose husbands were farmers. They lived together on this land, worked the land together probably in many cases. But as their husbands have passed away, they become the landowners and the managers of the farm. So this is a growing cohort.
It is. And women are increasingly, older women find themselves widowed, and they have been I think it's the number in Iowa is 64% have been, or perhaps that's in the country, 64% have been secondary operators. That's from the USDA agricultural census. And so women are moving from secondary operators into primary operators, and they need to have the information that their husbands had. They want to do marketing. And so we're seeing a move from farm partners into the primary farmer.
Well, you talked earlier about the fact that a lot of the women that you've talked to felt that their voices were not being heard. And Sheila's on the line from Washington, D.C. with a comment on that subject. Hello, Sheila. Hello, Sheila. Can you hear me? All right. We seem to have lost Sheila. But, Corey, as you talk to these women who are landowners, who are managing the farms for the first time, this seems like an area where anyone who had been in sort of a supportive role their whole lives and then all of a sudden were in a management position would have problems. Why do you think that it's a particular problem for women?
I don't know if it is particular for women. I think just that the trend is for women to suddenly find themselves in this position because the women are outliving the men. And so when they lack the resources. A lot of times you see men in the coffee houses and they're talking, and women haven't necessarily always talked about those things with other women unless they've been on the farm. And so these women that are participating in Women, Land, and Legacy find these networks and this informal social learning to be critical to give them the confidence, therefore, then to access the more formal sources of information.
Charity, if I could jump in on that, too.
Sure.
We've found the very same thing and often offer similar types of programs. And I think there is something specific, though, to women in this, in that most of the materials that the outreach folks use are geared very clearly to men. And men and women tend to learn differently. I believe that's true. So women really do, as Corey said, enjoy being able to get together in peer-to-peer, informal learning situations where there isn't somebody standing at the front of the room, typically a man, talking to them, delivering information into their heads. They want to sit in a room and each share their story. We consider them all to be experts on their own land and what they want for their land. They just don't necessarily have the language or the experience with the agency folks that their male counterparts have had. Pardon me. So I think that it's very critical for them to sit in a room together and talk about farming. One of the women that has come to one of our meetings said, you know, it's so great to get together in a room full of women and actually discuss farming challenges, because typically that's something that the men have always had the outlet to do. Like Corey said, they'll go to the elevator or they'll go to the coffee shop. They'll talk about prices and farming and marketing. Women haven't had that. So this provides these meetings that we both offer provide that space.
We're talking about women in agriculture today and changing trends, the special challenges that women in agriculture as landowners or farmers face. My guests right now are Lee Adcock, she's executive director of the Women, Food, and Agriculture Network, and Corey Bregendahl, who's involved with the organization Women, Land, and Legacy. You're listening to Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. You're also listening to Central Standard from KCUR in Kansas City. This is a special edition of Talk of Iowa in conjunction with Harvest Public Media. You're listening to a special edition of Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. This program is produced in conjunction with Harvest Public Media, which is a consortium of a number of different NPR stations throughout the Midwest, including Iowa Public Radio and KCUR in Kansas City. And the listeners of the program Central Standard are joining us today this hour. And you are welcome to join our conversation in Iowa or Kansas. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can also tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. We're talking about women in farming today and some of the changing trends in women in agriculture, some of the challenges that women face, and also how women are changing the face of agriculture. With me right now are Corey Bregendahl. She's with the organization Women, Land, and Legacy, and Lee Adcock, who's executive director of the Women, Food, and Agriculture Network. And before we move on, we're going to talk to some women who are directly involved in farming, some women landowners and farmers in the next 40 minutes or so. But I want to get Sheila on the line from Washington, D.C. into this conversation about the voices of women being heard in agriculture. Hello, Sheila.
Hello. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for being with us today. What would you like to talk about?
Sure. Well, I guess first of all, I'm actually from a farm in Nebraska, and so this topic is very near and dear to my heart. But I did write a piece recently that looked at the number of women who serve on large commodity boards, specifically the top five biggest commodity groups, and also looked at some recent PR campaigns that some of these groups have been putting on. They're specifically showcasing women and having women be the face, I guess, of their public relations campaigns. So the question that I posed in the piece was, you know, why is it okay for women to be the face of public relations campaigns, but not to have much leadership at the top of a lot of these commodity boards? And specifically, I found by looking at these five groups that only 1% of them were women, only 3 out of 228 people altogether. So my question for the panel is, like I said, why is it okay for women to be the public face for these public relations campaigns, but not to have any part in leadership?
Lee, can you respond to that?
I'd be happy to. It's not okay, is my answer. And Sheila, thanks for calling in. It's a great piece. It's on the Environmental Working Group website, and I encourage everybody to go check that out. But it's very telling. You know, I mean, I think you're talking about the Common Ground campaign, which is a new campaign that's being paid for by one of the national commodity groups, actually two of them, a corn group and a soybean group. And they're trying to put what they call a softer face on commodity agriculture. Now, I have absolutely no problem with women being showcased as the voice of agriculture, whatever type of agriculture they choose to pursue. That's wonderful. I'm happy to see that. What does give me pause, though, is, as you say, Sheila, the fact that at leadership positions on these large commodity boards, and we're talking about corn, soybeans, rice, cotton, and what's the other one? Wheat. There are very few women in the room. So it's a glaring contrast, I would say, kind of an irony. And I guess what I would say is that I encourage women in whatever type of agriculture to please go ahead and run for these boards, try to get on the boards, try to get on in positions of
power. Well, that was going to be my question, because, of course, this has been primarily a male-dominated field for a long time. Are there women trying to get into these positions of leadership right now, Lee, that you're aware of?
You know, there are, and there's actually a concerted effort right now on the part of several organizations, including Women Food and Ag Network and the Midwest Organic and Sustainable Education Service, MOSES in Wisconsin, and a group called the White House Project, which is a nonpartisan organization pushing women at all levels, particularly rural women, to get involved on commissions and boards and to run for elected office. And, you know, until we do that, then our numbers will always be underrepresented, because there are challenges, and we're underrepresented at the state level, at the federal level. We're a little over half the population, and we make up 16% to 20% of the people holding public office right now, depending on which level you look at.
And Charity, I would like to chime in here. Mm-hmm. For Women, Land, and Legacy, one of the outcomes that we found as a result of this project was that 1 in 10 women who were participating in Women, Land, and Legacy were actually joining other community boards as a result of this. So not only were they getting involved in agriculture, but they were actually contributing to their community in formal leadership positions as a result. And this is really indicative of the trend of women, though. And we see actually increasing rates of participation of women in from the Census of Ag in the small farms, the 1 to 9 acres, the 9 to 20 acres. And so those rates are a lot higher in terms of growth of women principal operators than they are in the large farms from 1,000 to 2,000 and plus size farms.
Sheila, thank you so much for bringing that up. And I want to bring a woman farmer into this conversation. Laura Krause is the proprietor of Appy Hills Farm in Mount Vernon. She plays the role of both farmer and landowner. Hello, Laura.
Hello.
Thank you so much for being here today.
Well, thank you for asking me.
And you have a 72-acre farm near Mount Vernon. You bought this toward the end of the farm crisis in the 1980s. What made you want to get involved in farming at that point?
Well, when I went to Iowa State in the mid-70s, I took some courses in soils and in agronomy, and from then I was kind of hooked. I wanted to learn more about soil and agriculture and food production. I worked on a number of farms during college and after, and in a number of different parts of the country in agricultural work. And unfortunately, because of the farm crisis, fortunate for me, I was able to afford some land in 1988. So I'm from Iowa, came back to Linn County where I grew up, and was able to purchase this small farm then, and I had just kind of grown into wanting to be my own farmer, you know, wanting to do it myself.
In 1988, it was probably a little bit unusual for a woman to buy a farm and plan to farm that land herself. Did you run into any obstacles in trying to make that actually happen?
Not very many. I'll tell you, the worst obstacles were in about 1975. By 1988, it wasn't nearly as hard. And I am blessed with wonderful neighbors here. I just fell into a place where I had really great neighbors who came over to help me. And I know that doesn't happen for everybody, but for me, the barriers were not so great. One thing was that I was friends with my banker since high school because I came back to a hometown. So that helped quite a lot, too, to make it possible to get the financing.
So you had personal connections that somebody trusted you and believed in you.
At a hometown, small town, local bank, you know.
Now, when you first got involved in the Women, Food, and Agriculture Network, I've read that you were skeptical, that you felt like there wasn't as great a need for women to have this kind of a support network. What were you skeptical about?
They weren't supposed to tell you that.
No, tell me.
I don't know. It wasn't that hard for me. But I'm a pretty outgoing person, so maybe that had something to do with it. Since I've worked with Women, Food, and Agriculture Network, I have learned that it is very hard for a lot of women. And so I was completely wrong.
Well, tell me some of the things that opened your eyes and made you realize, okay, maybe things worked well for me, but a lot of other women are running into obstacles. What were some of the things that you saw and heard about?
Well, Denise O'Brien had lots of anecdotal evidence of things that were difficult for women landowners.
And she was one of the founders of the network.
Yes, from Southwest Iowa. And so I heard about, well, and then in the neighborhood and around, you know, you just hear about tenants who don't do what the landlady wants and women who become widowed who, you know, 40 minutes after they walk out of the hospital, someone is coming over to say, can I rent the farm? Women just being treated kind of disrespectfully and not given credit for being able to do things. I think those stories became more apparent to me. And then when I worked with Women, Food, and Agriculture Network on the Women Caring for the Land program, where we did conservation education for women landowners, I heard more stories like that. I think you heard from Meg Dorman yesterday, one of the women who told about a tenant who wouldn't do what she wanted. And then also I work with a lot of young women because I have a vegetable business on my farm, and so I hire a lot of young women. And a lot of them aren't from farms but want to become farmers. And so, you know, just talking with them about the barriers to access to land, access to water, access to credit, all those kind of things are pretty daunting for any young person. But I think for young women it's maybe a little bit more scary.
What do you think makes women farmers different from men farmers?
Well, one difference I can see is that I think women farmers think more on an ecosystem level. I think women farmers maybe see a bigger picture of the farm as a whole, like how it fits into the community and how it fits into the landscape, rather than just as a productive unit that's going to grow a lot of corn. There's more attributes to that land that matter to women farmers. At least they talk about it more. But the other thing is I think women are more able to imagine small spaces being treated differently. I think my own experience has been that when I look at some of the land on my farm, there might be a pretty small area, maybe only a few hundred square feet, where I would like to see that little wetland there remain, and I'll go out of my way to go around it and kind of take care of it. When I hire the neighbors to do tillage for me, they go through it. They listen to me. I tell them there's this little wetland, and they're paying attention, and they really want to do it, but they can't even see it. It because it's so small. And I think it's maybe just a different way we look at a landscape and are able to imagine managing it. maybe I'm able to break it into smaller packages.
That's interesting. Well, Laura, stay with us for just a moment. I want to get a couple of callers on the air here. The number to call if you'd like to join our conversation is 866-780-9100. If you have questions for our guests, or if you are a woman involved in agriculture and you'd like to share a little bit about your experience, we'd love to hear from you as well. And Mary is on the line now from Shawnee Mission in Kansas. Hello, Mary.
Hi there. I wanted to ask more information about how you determine land rental cost. I have tried to research this many times, and if you know of websites or other ways to find out how to price your land rental, I would like to know.
And Mary, you sound like someone who has land that you rent out. Is that?
Yes, we do. Our father died in the 80s, and this became our job to do, and believe me, trying to find out how much to charge for land rental has been a difficult problem.
How much land are you responsible for, Mary?
In one area, it's about 449 acres. Of that, about 250 is rented.
All right. Well, Corey, can you help Mary out here?
What? I actually this morning did look up, and Kansas State University Extension does have a publication on this, and I'm assuming it's similar. I glanced through it briefly, but I'm assuming it's similar to Iowa State University Extension's publication, which shows average land rates by region. And, of course, there's land quality to take into consideration. And I don't know if there's some algorithm that you need to plug your information into, but Kansas State University Extension does have that information. And if you can't find it online, I would recommend you actually call somebody, either maybe a farm management specialist, and they should direct you in the right direction.
All right, okay. Mary, I hope that helps you out.
All right, thank you much.
Corey, do you hear from a lot of women with questions like that? I just don't know where to get this information. I've been doing this for years, and I don't even know where to start.
Certainly, and that's where the networks come into play, because maybe another woman has tried to find that information and can share her experiences and the roadblocks or the successes that she's experienced. So that's why those networks are so critical in Women Food and Agriculture and Women Land Legacy and the other work going on in Kansas as well and across the country.
Charity, I would add, too, this is Lee, I would say also talking to your neighbors, if you have neighbors who are willing to share that information. You know, it's interesting how close to the vest farmers will hold that, even when it's damaging to them. I mean, you know, I'm thinking of my dad, for example, who probably never once in his life would have talked about that with a neighbor. But women are much more likely to share that with one another because they realize that they might be preventing someone they know from being sort of taken advantage of. And, you know, I don't mean to demonize tenants. There are excellent tenants out there. We also hear stories from tenants who would really like to institute some better conservation practices on their land. And sometimes their landladies are reluctant because they don't want to put the money into it. So it's not, you know, this is certainly not a one-size-fits-all prescription. But what we hear is that in general, there are a lot of gaps in information for women landowners.
Do you also hear from women who want to sell their farmland and are afraid of being taken advantage of, Lee?
We hear from women who are interested in selling their land more so than being taken advantage of. They have a particular type of purchaser that they're interested in. They really want the farmland to go on to a young beginning farm family. They don't want the guy down the road who already owns half the county to get it. So we do occasionally have people posting on our listserv saying, I have a beautiful 210-acre farm here in southwestern Nebraska, wherever it happens to be. I would like it to be farmed sustainably. Could you please contact me? So I think, you know, that's another point I would make, is that in some cases, women are, and this goes to what Laura said, more likely to think about the farm in terms of the contribution it makes to the community and a legacy that it might leave, rather than purely for profit. Women are willing in many cases to not go for the maximum profit in order to improve conservation, improve, you know, the diversity on the farm. So we do hear from those women quite a bit.
Well, and before we get to a break here, I want to talk with Karen in Douglas County, Kansas. Hello, Karen.
Hello.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
Well, I am a 35-year-old woman, and I have started into the sustainable agriculture field. I have an 80-acre farm in Kansas. And I would say that there's a tremendous learning curve, and some of the things that you've hit on with your listeners, your comments, have really been helpful in terms of thinking that I think women do perhaps think more on the ecosystem level, and I think that's a lot of value. Most of the other sustainable farmers that I've had some contact with, which are few and far between, have been women. And I think bringing more women to the table might bring more of that conservation aspect to farming.
Well, that's very interesting. Karen, thank you so much for your input. And Lee, I'm guessing that you probably hear from people like Karen quite a lot.
I do. We do. In fact, it's been really startling to me over the last couple of years since I came on board as executive director. Our numbers have gone from 300 people in the network to well over 1,200 this year. It's just exploded. And I believe that a lot of that is riding the crest of this wave of interest in sustainable ag, healthier food around the country. Women have been the primary drivers behind sustainable ag and healthy food systems for decades. And now that's really starting to become more apparent. And again, we're very grateful to be allowed to support those women around the country in their work.
And I would like to add, too, that at the Leopold Center, we actually have local networks built throughout the state. And women, this is through the Value Chain Partnerships Project and particularly the Regional Food Systems Working Group, where women are taking leadership roles in their locations. And that's mostly 75% of that population. So I want to just echo what Lee said.
We're talking about women in agriculture today. My guests are Corey Bregendahl. She's with Women, Land, and Legacy. Lee Adcock with Women, Food, and Agriculture Network. And I'm going to say goodbye to Laura Krause, proprietor of Abbey Hills Farm in Mount Vernon. We'll continue our conversation in a moment. You're listening to Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Today, a special edition of the program produced in conjunction with Harvest Public Media, which is an initiative involving six NPR member stations in the Midwest to focus on agricultural issues. One of those stations is KCUR Public Radio in Kansas City. And today, also joining us this hour are the listeners of Central Standard. If you'd like to join our conversation about women in agriculture, you can give us a call. The number is 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. I want to bring another voice of a woman farmer, a woman landowner into this conversation right now. With me on the line is Helen Gunderson, and she is a landowner. And although she does a little bit of farming in her urban backyard in Ames, Iowa, with chickens and a vegetable garden, Helen grew up in the country. She grew up in Rolfe, Iowa. Her father farmed. Her brother was groomed to take over the family business. And Helen, you always were interested in farming, but you just weren't included.
Well, I certainly grew up with an agrarian influence and thought that farming was the most important thing, most important lifestyle there was. And I identified with what I saw in my father and grandfather. My grandfather farmed with horses. And I think I wanted to grow up to be a farmer, but girls in that era did not take shop. I don't think they were allowed to take agriculture in schools, and the decisions seemed to be made, you know, by men. And so I had to choose another route in life and feel sort of like an exile for a long time. Eventually, I inherited farmland, so I'm very privileged in that regard. In the 1990s, I started a project about the road I grew up on and interviewed different people in the area and found that there actually were women like Noreen Riegelsberger and Velma Howard who really took an active role in managing their land and knew about the land. But in your earlier guests were talking about gender differences and perspectives. And although I think there are real differences between how men and women see the land. In my case, I have one brother who, as you say, was groomed to make the farm decisions. He had the 40-acre field project when he was in high school. He had cattle. I got to have chickens, which actually is, in retrospect, kind of a nice thing. But I have four sisters. We all own land. And I think it's fair to say that most of them see their land as capital commodity and that there have been instances where I've been radically different than them in terms of them deferring to the men in their lives, my father, my brother, their spouses, in terms of, you know, making decisions. And I've certainly benefited from having land as a capital commodity, but, you know, my angst about the favoritism toward men really is something I deeply, I have a lot of sorrow about. You know, I've been to Presbyterian Seminary, have a degree from there, and a lot of the Old Testament teachings were about land use. It was surprising. And I think that there's a privilege and responsibility to being a landowner, and part of that in my mind is stewardship and seeing that there are justice issues in the land and that people who own land can make a difference, even if the difference that I'm making is a small difference. It's a matter of justice in terms of gender issues, I guess in terms of class issues, but also in terms of, you know, the economy and in terms of the environment. So I found a way to rent part of my land to a young woman, Betsy Dahl. She's one of, I think, 8 children in a homeschooled family. They have a very different style of farming, very collaborative. It's not like one man farming thousands of acres or one man and a colleague or one man and a wife. And it's just so wonderful to have Betsy out farming and have her collaboration with other siblings. And then I get to have organic farm from organic corn from their farm or organically raised oats and get to feed it to my chickens in my backyard.
That's wonderful. Well, Helen, you mentioned that you did inherit land, and I know that you went through quite a process of communicating with your father and your brother and standing up for yourself to get to actually manage the land that you owned. And what was it that, once you became the manager of that land and that farm, what made you look around and say, I want to do something different. I want to transition some of this land to organic, and I want to get somebody with fresh eyes and fresh experience involved?
Well, I don't know exactly where that urge, you know, started. I think, again, seeing it as a justice issue set the context for it. But certainly it's been helpful to belong to Practical Farmers of Iowa and to get to know people there. And I would go to their annual meeting, and I didn't feel like an interloper. Well, I did for a while. But as I got to know people, they were always so supportive and so helpful. And I would be at meetings, and I would hear about farmers that had gone strictly organic 25 years ago. And I saw a video with Laura Carlson, and I just thought, oh, my goodness, what can I do, you know, that's more sustainable? And for a long time, I felt compromised because I thought, well, I need the income off the land. And I don't know, but I'm really pleased to have been able to make some differences.
Helen, we need to move on, so we have just a moment left with you. But there are young women out there who are thinking about agriculture as a career, who are drawn to the land. What is the one thing that you would tell a young woman considering agriculture as a career that you wish you had known?
Somehow have confidence in your slightest inklings of what you want to do. But I'd like to address the other end just really quickly, and that's the older people who have the land.
Uh-huh.
The younger people will not be able to inherit your land or maybe buy it. It's just so expensive. And I think that landowners should begin thinking not only about how to pass land down to their biological offspring, you know, their children, but find a way to start transitioning some land ownership to young people so they can actually afford to have the land, because I think that's a big problem in agriculture, is the people that want to farm sustainably might not be able to afford owning land.
Helen, thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome.
Helen Gunderson is a landowner, and she does a little bit of farming in her backyard. We're talking about women in farming today on Iowa Public Radio and on KCUR in Kansas City. And also with me, continuing to be with me, are Lee Adcock, Executive Director of the Women Food and Agriculture Network, and Corey Bregendahl with Women, Land, and Legacy. And we're going to talk with another woman farmer in just a moment, but I want to bring Adrian on the line here from Kansas City. Hello, Adrian.
Hey, how's it going?
Good. What would you like to talk about?
What I wanted to know, which I think is a good idea, maybe your guest panelists would know, is are there any programs now that would, say, like, get young women who actually grew up on the farm, like any scholarships that would actually let them pursue agriculture more, choose that they would go that way? Because one thing I noticed, and my grandmother was a farmer, by the way, I noticed a lot of times, especially young women that grow up on these farms, a lot of stuff, they might not, quote unquote, have it on paper, but they really are getting that firsthand experience now. So, you know, with any kind of scholarships that would be available to get them in the door of agriculture, you would be surprised if just their experience on the farm has actually been the foundation. And like I said, are there any programs that would actually, any special scholarships that are set up?
Well, yeah, let's ask about that. Corey, can you respond to that?
I think Lee has a response
Lee?
To that.
All right.
A couple of good points brought up there, and that is one of which is that it's very difficult for a young woman, particularly an urban woman. We see a lot of young urban women wanting to farm, which is very heartening. But how do they get experience? You know, they can take all the classes they want, but until they're out there in the dirt, it's just not going to sink in. So in terms of scholarships, I'm not aware of many, but we do have opportunities in various parts of the country, including here in Iowa, for young women to come and work on women-owned farms. Well, men and women both, but particularly in Iowa, Women, Food, and Ag Network operates an apprenticeship program called Harvesting Our Potential. Young women are placed on farms for 8 to 10 weeks during the growing season, and they do everything that the farmer does during that time. So they really get out there and do everything from planting the seeds to harvesting, packaging, talking to the CSA customers, marketing, sitting at farmer's market, and doing also a lot of their access to that mentor is really crucial. And we've had feedback from a lot of the young women who say, you know, this was the one experience that showed me that farming is exactly what I meant to do. And we've also heard from some young women who say, I'm really glad I had that experience because now I know that I want to approach food systems work in some other way. That lifestyle is not for me. And that's really important before you go out there and try to, you know, get your 40 acres or your 10 acres. You need to know whether you want that lifestyle. So, but, you know, getting the experience on the farm itself is really crucial. And that kind of training should be on everybody's agenda if they're trying to get into sustainable ag or any other form of ag.
Adrian, thank you so much for asking that question, a very important question right now. And I want to bring another woman farmer on the show before we run out of time. Lois Reichardt is part of the new wave of women getting involved in a different kind of agriculture, small farms. She's a proprietor of Reichardt's Dairy Air in Knoxville. Hello, Lois.
Hello. Good morning.
And you have goats on your farm. Tell me a little bit about your operation.
Well, I operate what's considered a goat micro dairy operation. I milk about between 15 and 20 dairy goats and turn that wonderful milk into a high-end niche product, which is goat cheese. I primarily market through the Des Moines Downtown Farmers Market, also some high-end and natural foods retailers. And I do have a distributor in Chicago for some of it, going to restaurants and gourmet stores in Chicago as well. It's grown into that.
And how did you get started? You didn't set out to be a farmer.
Oh, not at all. Now, I've always had a love for animals and a love for food, but I didn't really plan for it to intersect this way. It was just one of those things. I actually got into this the way many small goat farmers do, which was I had a son who was intolerant of cow's milk, and we needed to find an alternative. Goat milk did work for him. We had property, we had buildings. My husband had milked dairy goats before, and he literally begged me for 3 years to get dairy goats, and I just said no. I was caring for his elderly parents. I had this small, fussy baby. I said, I can't deal with it. But he finally wore me down, and I said, okay, we'll get a few goats, but really I don't want anything to do with this. And I refused. I wasn't going to do any goat care. I said, I'll take care of the milk. But that really only lasted about a week. And then I was in love with the animals, and it just sort of progressed from there. like I said, it's a real common story.
Right. Well, and Lois, what's interesting, I think, about your farm, your operation, is not only are you farming, you're caring for livestock, you're milking your goats and taking care of them, but you also have become a cheesemaker as well. So your involvement goes beyond traditional farming.
Right. And honestly, I think women are well suited to a setup like this. We tend to pay attention to detail. We're very oriented toward cleanliness. I think maybe I'm only speaking for myself. I don't mean to be sexist, but I think we all have real high standards about things, and if we're going to do things, we're going to do them right. And if I wanted to make cheese, I wouldn't want anybody else's milk but my own, because I know the animals and I know their health status and I know how the milk's being handled, and vice versa. I just like having control over the process from beginning to end.
Well, Lois, thank you so much for sharing your story with us today.
Sure.
Lois Reichardt is the proprietor of Reichardt's Dairy Air in Knoxville. It's a goat farm, and she also makes high-end goat cheeses. And as we go today, we have just a moment left. Lee, talking to Lois, as I mentioned, you know, she's a farmer, but she's also creating an end product and dealing with customers and delivering that product to people in the community. Is that a trend that you see a lot of among women who want to get involved in agriculture, wanting to do it all, make the food, produce the food, and also interact with their customers as well?
You know, women are liable to that, aren't we? We always want to do it all. But yes, absolutely. There are a lot of women out there who come into farming because of food and because they're mothers often. They want healthy food for their families. They start, you know, in Lois's case, she needed goat milk, so she just decided to, you know, cave into her husband eventually and get the goats and start making the cheese. Some women get into vegetable gardening for that reason. They want something that they can also do with their families that would be healthy for them, so they bring their children into it. There are many women out in the countryside doing what Lisa Kiverest in Wisconsin calls ecopreneuring, starting businesses in rural areas that are based on agriculture but include a bed and breakfast, for example. So things that women traditionally are good at and care about are being built into very viable businesses. And there are lots of these stories. And I want to point out real quick before we go that there are many of these stories being featured this month in the spring issue of Edible Iowa River Valley, which is a great resource for people interested in food and farming in Iowa. The whole issue this spring is based around women in agriculture. So good stories in there to check out.
Well, Lee, before I let you go, and Corey, before I let you go, we have just a moment. You have done a lot of education. You've brought a lot of women together, and clearly interest in agriculture among women is growing. But can you each think of the one problem that you think needs the most attention right now? And Corey, I'll let you go first.
I can speak to that, and I wanted to mention we've gotten requests from women who say, you know, I want to have somebody a tenant on my land. Over half of the land, farmland in Iowa, is leased, and so women want someone who's going to treat that land right, and so they have these values, and they want those carried out. And the Leopold Center has funded some work in this area. The Agricultural Law Center at Drake University has worked on a project called the Sustainable Agricultural Land Stewardship Project, and the purpose of this project is to provide information to absentee landowners to help them make decisions. And this website that they're unveiling, I think it's on Thursday, will provide model sustainable land leases for women and other landowners.
And we're going to have to let that be the last word. Thank you both so much for your time today.
Thanks, Charity.
Thank you.
Corey Bregendahl is with the organization Women, Land, and Legacy and the Leopold Center for Sustainable Agriculture at Iowa State University. Lee Adcock is executive director of the Women, Food, and Agriculture Network. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Production assistance today from Catherine Perkins, Alex Hoyer, and Russell Mansky. At KCUR, thanks to Bill Anderson, Kim Noble, and Andrea Salenzi. Special thanks to Donna Vestal of Harvest Public Media and Iowa Public Radio's Kathleen Masterson.